Now, though he knew it not, his indifference was a matter of much gossip at the court. Men marveled greatly at such exemption, for all whom the princess had chosen heretofore, whether captains, cupbearers, or high dignitaries, or common soldiers and grooms, had yielded easily to her bewitchments. So it came to pass that Ulua was angered, since all men knew that her beauty was scorned by Amelzane, and her sorcery was impotent to ensnare him. Thereupon she ceased to appear at the revels of Famagra, and Amelzane beheld her no longer in the halls and gardens, and neither his dreams nor his waking hours were haunted any more by the spell-wrought semblance of Ulua. So, in his innocence, he rejoiced as one who has encountered a grave peril, and has come forth unharmed. Then, later, on a moonless night, as he lay sleeping tranquilly in the moonless hours before dawn, there came to him, in his dream, a figure muffled from crown to heel with the vestments of the tomb. Tall as a Caryatid, awful and menacing, it leaned above him in silence more malignant than any curse. And the cerements fell open at the breast, and the charnel worms and death scarabs and scorpions, together with shreds of rotting flesh, rained down upon Amelzane. Then, as he awoke from his nightmare, sick and stifled, he breathed a carrion fetter, and felt against him the presence of a still, heavy body. Affrighted, he rose and lit the lamp, but the bed was empty. Yet the odor of putrefaction still lingered, and Amelzane could have sworn that the corpse of a woman, 2 weeks dead and teeming with maggots, had laid closely at his side in the darkness. Thereafter, for many nights, his slumbers were broken by such foulnesses as this. Hardly could he sleep at all for the horror of that which came and went, invisible but palpable, in his chamber. Always he woke from ill dreams, to find about him the stiffened arms of long-dead succubi, or to feel at his side the amorous trembling of fleshless skeletons. He was choked by the natron and bitumen of mummified breasts. He was crushed by the unremoving weight of gigantic likes. He was kissed nauseously by lips that were oozing tatters of corruption. Nor was this all, for other abominations came to him by day, visible and perceived through all his senses, and more loathsome even than the dead. Things that seemed as the leavings of leprosy crawled before him at high noon in the halls of Famagra, and they rose up from the shadows and sidled toward him, leering whitely with faces that were no longer faces, and trying to caress him with their half-eaten fingers. About his ankles, as he went to and fro, there clung lascivious impusia, with breasts that were furred like the bat, and serpent-bodied lamia, minched and pirouetted before his eyes, like the dancers before the king. No longer could he read his books or solve his problems of algebra in peace, for the letters changed from moment to moment beneath his scrutiny, and were twisted into runes of evil meaning, and the signs and ciphers he had written were turned into devils no bigger than large emmets that writhed foully across the paper, as if on a field, performing those rites which are acceptable only to Alia, queen of perdition, and goddess of all inequities. Thus, plagued and bedeviled, the youth Amelzane was near to madness, yet he dared not complain or speak to others of aught that he beheld, for he knew that these horrors, whether immaterial or substantial, were perceived only by himself. Nightly, for the full period of a moon, he lay with dead things in his chamber, and daily, in all his comings and goings, he was besought by aberrant spectres. And he doubted not that all these were the sendings of Uluah, angered by his refusal of her love. And he remembered that Sabmon had hinted darkly of certain enchantments from which the ashes of Yos-Ebni, preserved in the silver amulet, might be powerless to defend him. And knowing that such enchantments were upon him now, he recalled the final injunction of the old Ashimage. So, feeling that there was no help for him save in the wizardry of Sabmon, he went before King Famagor, and begged a short leave of absence from the court. And Famagor, who was well pleased with the cupbearer, and moreover had begun to note his thinness and pallor, granted the request readily. Mounted on a palfrey chosen for speed and endurance, Amalzain rode northward from Mirab on a sultry morning in autumn. A strange heaviness had stilled all the air, and great coppery clouds were piled like towering many-domed palaces of genii on the desert hills. The sun appeared to swim in molten brass. No vultures flew on the silent heavens, and the very jackals had retired to their lairs, as if in fear of some unknown doom. But Amalzain, riding swiftly toward Submon's hermitage, was haunted still by leprous larvae that rose before him, posturing foully on the dune sands, and he heard the desirous moaning of succubi under the hooves of his horse. The night waylaid him, airless and starless, as he came to a well amid dying palms. Here he lay sleepless, with the curse of Uluah still upon him, for it seemed that the dry, dusty likes of desert tombs reclined rigidly at his side, and bony fingers wooed him toward the unfathomable sand-pits from which they had risen. Weary and devil-ridden, he reached the wattled house of Sebmon at noon of the next day. The sage greeted him affectionately, showing no surprise, and listened to his story with the air of one who hearkens a twice-told tale. "These things, and more, were known to me from the beginning," he said to Amalzain. "I could have saved you from the sendings of Uluah ere now, but it was my wish that you should come to me at this time, forsaking the court of the dotard Famagor and the evil city of Mirab, whose inequities are now at the full. The eminent doom of Mirab, though unread by her astrologers, has been declared in the heavens, and I would not that you should share the doom. It is needful," he went on, "that the spells of Uluah should be broken on this very day, and the sendings returned to her that sent them, since otherwise they would haunt you forever, remaining as a visible and tangible plague when the witch herself has gone to her black lord, Phasadon, in the seventh hell." Then, to the wonderment of Amalzain, the old magician brought forth from the cabinet of ivory an elliptic mirror of dark and burnished metal, and placed it before him. The mirror was held aloft by the muffled hands of a veiled image, and, peering within it, Amalzain saw neither his own face nor the face of Sabmon, nor aught of the room itself reflected. And Sabmon enjoined him to watch the mirror closely, and then repaired to a small oratory that was curtained from the chamber with long and queerly painted rolls of camel parchment. Watching the mirror, Amalzain was aware that certain of the sendings of Uluah came and went beside him, striving ever to gain his attention with unclean gestures such as harlots use. But resolutely he fixed his eyes on the void and unreflecting metal, and anon he heard the voice of Sabmon chanting without pause the powerful words of an antique formula of exorcism. And now, from between the oratory curtains, there issued the intolerable pungency of burning spices, such as are employed to drive away demons. Then Amalzain perceived without lifting his eyes from the mirror, that the sendings of Ulua had vanished like vapors blown away by the desert wind. But, in the mirror, a scene limned itself darkly, and he seemed to look on the marble towers of the city of Mirab, beneath overlooming bastions of ominous cloud. Then the scene shifted, and he saw the palace hall, where Famagor nodded in wine-stained purple, senile and drunken, amid his ministers and sycophants. Again the mirror changed, and he beheld a room with tapestries of shameless design, where, on a couch of fire-bright crimson, the Princess Ulua sat with her latest lovers amid the fuming of golden thurbles. Marveling, as he peered within the mirror, Amalzane witnessed a strange thing, for the vapors of the thurbles, mounting thickly and voluminously, took, from instant to instant, the form of those very apparitions by which he had been bedeviled so long. Ever they rose and multiplied, till the chamber teemed with the spawn of hell and the vomitings of the riven charnel. Between Ulua and the lover at her right hand, who was a captain of the king's guard, there coiled a monstrous lamia, enfolding them both in its serpentine volumes and crushing them with its human bosom. And close at her left hand appeared a half-eaten corpse, leering with lipless teeth, from whose cerements worms were sifted upon Ulua and her second lover, who was a royal equerry. And, swelling like the fumes of some witch's vat, those other abominations pressed about the couch of Ulua with obscene mouthings and fingerings. At this, like the mark of a hellish branding, horror was printed on the features of the captain and the equerry, and a terror rose in the eyes of Ulua like a pale flame ignited in sunless pits, and her breast shuddered beneath the breast cups. And now, in a trice, the mirrored room began to rock violently, and the censers were overturned on the tilting flags, and the shameless hangings shook and bellied like the blown sails of a vessel in storm. Great cracks appeared in the floor, and beside the couch of Ulua, a chasm deepened swiftly, and then widened from wall to wall. The whole chamber was riven asunder, and the princess and her two lovers, with all her loathly sendings about them, were hurled tumultuously into the chasm. After that, the mirror darkened, and Amalzane beheld for a moment the pale towers of Mirab, tossing and falling on heavens black as adamant. The mirror itself trembled, and the veiled image of metal supporting it began to totter and seemed about to fall, and the wattled house of Sabmon shook in the passing earthquake. But, being stoutly built, stood firm while the mansions and palaces of Mirab went down in ruin. When the earth had ceased its long trembling, Sabmon issued from the oratory. "It is needless to moralize on what has happened," he said. "You have learned the true nature of carnal desire, and have likewise beheld the history of mundane corruption. Now, being wise, you will turn early to those things which are incorruptible and beyond the world." Thereafter, till the death of Sabmon, Amalzane dwelt with him, and became his only pupil in the science of the stars and the hidden arts of enchantment and sorcery. This is the end of The Witchcraft of Ulua.